Hello, Marian Galevich here from the EIN eLearning Editorial Board. We would love your feedback on EINcast Weekly Neurology. Please help us to learn more about you, our listeners, and plan the future of EINcast by taking our short survey. If you do, you can enter our prize draw for the chance to win free registration for the EIN Congress 2025 in Helsinki. The survey will be online until the end of December 2024. Just look for the link in the episode description. And now, we hope you enjoyed today's episode.
Welcome to EINcast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our weekly EIN podcast. My name is Yıldız Degirmenci, and I am the Associate Editor of the e-learning platform of the European Academy of Neurology. And today, Dr. Natalia Shaiko is with me to talk about cannabis-based medicine in neurology. She's a neurologist who completed her residency and PhD in Warsaw, Poland. She also completed a one-year postdoctoral fellowship in genomics and big data at Department of Neurology, Yale University, USA, and clinical and research fellowship in Tourette syndrome at the Department of Clinical Neurosciences, University of Calgary, Canada. She gained expertise in the field of cannabis-based medicine, working with her mentor and chair of the International Association for Cannabinoid Medicines, Professor Kirsten Müller-Wall from Hanover Medical School in Germany. She currently serves as a board member of the European Society for the Study of Tourette Syndrome and member of special interest groups of EIN dedicated to diversity and inclusion, movement disorders, and child neurology. So welcome, Natalia, and thank you for taking time today for our podcast.
Thank you so much, Yıldız. It's a pleasure and really an honor to be here with you to discuss this interesting topic.
Thank you once again for accepting our invitation. It's very nice to be with you here indeed. So it's a very hot topic, Natalia. To start with, can you please define the cannabis-based medicines for us?
It's an interesting topic because, indeed, there is a lot of confusion also among patients about it. So basically, as you know, we have this plant that is called, commonly known as the cannabis floss. And so cannabis-based medicine, they are all based the derivatives from this plant. And there are different types of cannabis-based medicine. So this could be just regular, what we call medical marijuana, which is basically, you know, the whole plant, like the flower of the cannabis that could be, for example, used as a vaporization. And it has different content of what we call THC, which is tetrahydrocannabinol, one of the most important and actually psychoactive components of cannabis-based medicines. And then the second most sort of important substance that is present in the cannabis-based medicine is cannabidiol, CBD. That is also present in the flower, so in cannabis flower, but depending on the way you process the plant, you can have different products. So first of all, like I said, it could be like medical marijuana. Then the second one could be, for example, just an extract from the THC, like pure THC, which the common name maybe you know in some countries is like in Germany, it's dronabinol. Then we also have other cannabis extracts that also have different content of THC and CBD. But also, we were going to talk about this later. For example, we have a spray that the common one that is maybe you also heard about is Sativex. So it's nabiximol. And this one contains THC and CBD at the ratio 1:1. So, well, but, you know, with the development of this industry, which is gaining traction recently, we also get more and more products on the market. But I would say that, the most common ones are those that are either dominant in THC or they have like a sort of like a combination of THC and CBD at the same ratio, or they are CBD dominant. And we also have products like that, or they have pure CBD that are used, for example, in epilepsy. Yeah, so this is like a short explanation.
Fantastic. short but very impressive explanation. Thank you so much. We learned a lot from the very beginning. So speaking of neurology, what are the most common neurological indications that the cannabis-based medicines are used? You just mentioned epilepsy, but are there more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, indeed, I think that's sort of the most tested one is epilepsy, especially, you know, this treatment-resistant types of epilepsy. Then the second one, generally, well, maybe we're not going to discuss this, and it could be, you know, also a domain generally of anesthesiologists or like pain clinicians, but of course pain, different types of pain, also neuropathic pain. And actually from our field, movement disorders. So there are some studies reporting about the use of cannabis-based medicine for treatment of tics and Parkinson's disease, but mainly non-motor symptoms. In Europe, for example, in Poland, it's even registered also for treatment of spasticity, especially in patients with multiple sclerosis, but generally also other types of spasticity. So I'd say that these are the most common ones. That are used in neurology.
And I understand that it really is an, you know, developing era, right? The use of cannabis-based medicine in the treatment of several neurological, you know, conditions. But among these, epilepsy is really a challenging condition, right, Natalia? So I was wondering, are there any particular types of epilepsies that the cannabis-based medicine are useful? Can you define it?
Yes, yes. So in spite of being, you know, like a developing field in neurology and generally, I would say that it's like a hot topic, cannabis-based medicine nowadays in overall in health, it's true that it's been widely tested, the most widely tested for epilepsy, but not any kind of epilepsy. So if you look into the guidelines and even like we prepared in Poland with our colleagues, like a book of recommendations for clinicians. And if you go to the recommendations of American Academy of Neurology or International League Against Epilepsy, basically it's used for this treatment-resistant types of epilepsy. So Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, the second one is Dravet syndrome, and then tuberculosis sclerosis. So these three are the most common ones. And of course, basically, there are some criteria that you have to fulfill first to try these in children. Mainly, these are, of course, as you know, children that are severely affected, have sometimes like multiple seizures a day even. And this is also important, that in these cases, we use CBD. In epilepsy, we use CBD. So just pure CBD, not THC. This is an important issue to mention, I think.
Now, okay, so I understand that there are selection criteria to use these kind of drugs in any kind of epilepsy syndrome, right?
Yes, yes.
To understand it deeply, to focus on it, what is the proposed mechanism that these drugs, these medicines can be effective in epilepsy?
Mm-hmm. So first of all, you know, there are many potential mechanisms that have been studied and sort of speculated. One of them is even on the genetic level. So we know that, especially again in these children or individuals who have treatment-resistant epilepsy, there is an involvement of, or there are found some mutations in the CNR1 gene, and this is a gene that is cannabis receptor gene. So even on this molecular genetic level, and this has been also shown in animal models of treatment-resistant epilepsy. Similarly, there are also some neuroimaging studies that have shown that there are some disruptions in endocannabinoid system in individuals who suffer from these conditions. So this is the second one, sort of most common that it has been found. And then there are also some studies that have found that in the cerebrospinal fluid of children and, you know, individuals with this treatment-resistant epilepsy syndromes, there are some changes also in the endocannabinoids, like some, you know, derivatives from the endocannabinoid system. So these all are sort of supporting the hypothesis that it could be beneficial. But of course, the strongest sort of support is the clinical use. So we know from the studies, randomized controlled trials in epilepsy, and here, you know, these are big trials, very well designed that have shown that it's effective indeed and relatively safe. This is also important to mention because CBD, like I said, it's not psychoactive. So, you know, it's safer in children. Yes.
Well, okay, lovely to hear that. But you already clarified the selection criteria and, you know, the mechanisms of action of these drugs in epilepsy. I'm still on epilepsy. So what are the recommendations for starting the treatment with cannabis-based medicine in epilepsy?
Basically, this our first recommendation is very similar for basically any condition. So you should start low and go slow. So basically low doses and then increase it very slowly. This is the first one. And usually we recommended the recommended dose of CBD, pure CBD, is 5 milligrams per kilogram per day. Usually we divide this in 2 doses per day. And this could be increased over time to 10 milligrams per kilogram per day, again, into 2 doses per day after 2 weeks of treatment. And then you should sort of optimize and see how the patient is reacting, whether the tolerance is good. And if it is good indeed, then you can increase until the maximal dose. And the maximal dose, it's about 20 to 25 milligrams per kilogram per day. But it's very important to monitor for drug interactions, especially in patients with such, you know, complex conditions like this treatment resistance syndromes, because they often are treated also with anti-epileptic drugs, for example, clobazam. So, remember about drug interactions and checking for them.
Indeed, there are very important clues for starting any kind of treatment in epilepsy, but also in particular with cannabis-based medicine. Thank you so much, Natalia. So we share a common interest with you. You are a movement disorders person, so do I, and you are also interested in Tourette syndrome and work with that. So what about these kind of medicines in Tourette syndrome? You know, are they beneficial for the tics, or do they have an improvement effect on psychiatric comorbidities, or what? How do we use it? What's the place of cannabis-based medicine in Tourette syndrome and tics?
Yeah, so generally, as you know, and maybe the listeners also heard about Tourette syndrome, that it's a condition which, you know, combines both tics, so movement disorders, but also in often in like 80-90% of patients, these patients have comorbid psychiatric conditions. So it would be great to have like a medication that would target both. As you know, both like recommendations of American Academy of Neurology as well as European Society for Tourette Syndrome, in these guidelines, the first line treatment is actually behavioral therapy. But the problem with that is that we don't have really access in many countries. So, and then if it's not available, we have pharmacotherapy, which is quite limited. Sometimes, you know, people have a lot of side effects through neuroleptics, or they, for example, don't really respond to the medications. So then, you can try some alternative. And this alternative could be cannabis-based medicine, which, of course, I would only try because I don't want to sort of, after this webcast, that people will think that we should use it always in Tourette syndrome. No, I think that it should be used only in, selected cases, in people who really, tried, behavioral therapy if available, at least three medications, I would say, that are commonly used, like neuroleptics, or alpha agonists, or like a combination. If this doesn't work, and then, for example, they have severe tics, and if you consider deep brain stimulation and you tried, for example, also Botox, then as a next step before DBS, I personally would consider, especially in adult, cannabis-based medicine. Here, we don't have as strong data as in epilepsy. We have, four clinical trials from Hanover, because like I said, there is like a big team working there in this particular topic. And one big study was published 1 year ago, which was called Canetics, in which they tested efficacy and tolerability in big sample, quite big for Tourette, almost 100 patients. nabiximols. So this combination of THC and CBD 1:1. They nearly missed the statistical significance, but they demonstrated in the interaction analysis that it just could, like, it's beneficial in males, especially with coexisting ADHD. So, and this is sort of in line what we see also in clinical practice in other studies, that especially like in the individuals that have ADHD, and there is also one RCT with ADHD that has shown that it could be beneficial, that it could be used. But again, I want to stress out that as a, you know, sort of like not last resort, but like an almost last resort before DBS, in my opinion, because it, you know, it doesn't have such strong studies as, for example, neuroleptics or alpha agonists. So, but it is good solution because, like I said, in many patients, it can target both tics, but also psychiatric comorbidities, such as also anxiety, ADHD. And we know that, you know, in many patients with tics, if their anxiety improve, then in turn, their tics also improve. So it's sort of all, everything is related.
It is very important. Thank you so much, because you just mentioned and emphasized that it's not a first-line treatment option. So we definitely should go on with the standard therapies for Tourette syndrome and the tics. And then just before, if I get it right, DBS, in accessible countries, right? In selected patients, exactly. We have to underline it very carefully, I believe. In selected patients, it should be, it can maybe tried, okay, in a very careful, under a very careful examination, right?
Yeah. I just wanted to also stress out that if you, like Yildiz said, if you even consider it, then you should always also ask about the history of drug addictions, obviously, because if there is a patient with a history of like any kind of drug addiction, not only cannabis, but any kind of, it's like a red flag and you should avoid it, obviously. Yes.
Indeed, we do understand that we should be very careful in, you know, selecting the patients or, you know, giving this treatment options, starting these treatment options. Thank you for this important message, Natalia, for the young listeners especially. So, coming to other movement disorders, you know, we have many patients with Parkinson's disease, and they're asking whether these cannabis-based medicines will be good for their symptoms. What do you think about that?
I agree that clinically it's an important topic because so many patients in the clinic, they ask about it and there is a lot of confusion. And actually, from studies, we know that, unfortunately, we cannot recommend it definitely, like it's not effective for treatment of motor symptoms like bradykinesia or tremor. It's not working. Like we know this from studies and we should not recommend it. But it could be helpful. There is like one study, well, several studies, but the most important one was published by the group from Innsbruck in Austria. And it has been shown that it could be beneficial for pain. As you know, many patients with Parkinson's disease, they have non-motor symptoms such as pain or problems with sleep or anxiety. So I want to also stress out that it's not, in my opinion, again, a first-line therapy, but because still we only have like really one good study that is showing that it could be helpful for pain. But, you know, if a patient asks you about it, I think that you should stress out. It's not helping for, will not help for your like motor symptoms, could help with pain. But we should again, like the same list is for Tourette. We should ask about addictions and, you know, only consider this if really there is no other option. For example, as you know, so sometimes pain in PD is related to dystonia. So in my opinion, it's better to try first also botulinum toxin. And then if it's not working, you can consider CBD, like cannabis-based medicine. But only for treatment of pain, in my opinion, or sleeping problems or anxiety, not motor symptoms, no.
Okay, having said that, we do need further research, isn't it? We do need further research for the effectivity of these kind of medicines in broader fields of neurology. What about MS, multiple sclerosis?
Yeah, so here, like I said at the very beginning, basically the biggest sort of at the moment, you know, studies and evidence is supporting the use of Sativex. So again, this is the nabiximols combination of THC and CBD ratio 1:1 for treatment. And it's a, this is spray that, for example, in Poland, at least is registered for treatment of spasticity in MS. And here, you know, we also have pretty good studies supporting it, and I think it's safe. And clinicians shouldn't be afraid of it. But again, the same circumstances. So you have to discuss everything, the same things with the patient. And of course, at least like in Poland, it's registered, but it's not like covered the price. And for example, in Poland, it's very expensive. So I think this is another limitation depending on the country. But in particularly in MS, I would only consider this in the spasticity, and only like we have strong data for nabiximols, not, for example, medical marijuana. So only this product I would recommend personally for spasticity, if anything else is not working and if patient can afford it or it's available in your country.
Well, you already gave a wonderful overview of this cannabis-based medicines. Shall we conclude with the side effects of these medicines? Could you summarize them for us, please?
Yeah. So the most common one, actually, you know, it's like a, what we commonly patients can describe as a sensation of feeling high, especially, of course, in the products that have THC. And the other one is also somnolence or like being tired. This is so all of these are related especially to the THC. And then in some other people, maybe you heard about it, that there is this increased appetite, which is used sometimes in some indications like cachexia, you know, in AIDS. But for some people, it could be like a side effect, increased appetite. And then basically some dry mouth can also happen. And in rare cases, but this basically is mainly provoked in a patient that, for example, is not following the regime of the drug. For example, we recommend a small dose and somebody is overusing it. Then it can cause psychosis, but in very high doses. And it's like a common misconception. I mean, it's true that generally psychiatrists, they deal with psychosis provoked by cannabis, but this is like, you know, this recreational cannabis. So excessive consumption of cannabis, recreational cannabis, can cause psychosis. But if you do it with a doctor and very, again, follow this, go low, and increase slowly the medication, then it's safe. But of course, you know, this is why I want to stress really after this podcast that you should always ask the patient about addictions, because if there is a patient who has such inclinations, then of course they can like overuse it and abuse it. And then the risk of psychosis is much higher, or some cognitive side effects on long term if it's used on in very high doses. But again, if it's used with a doctor in a very careful way, then it's safe.
Well, thank you, Natalia. I'm very impressed. I personally would like to thank you for, you know, covering this very hot topic with updated knowledge and, you know, for providing a greater understanding of the topic. I really would like to thank you, and it was a great pleasure to be with you here today. Would you like to say any word to our audience before concluding?
Thank you so much. Also, it was a great experience again, Liz. I hope to have more opportunities to have another podcast with you. And well, maybe just to conclude, it's just, I think that cannabis-based medicine and neurology, it's an emerging topic, interesting topic. I agree with Yildiz that we need more research, definitely. I think other than epilepsy in all these indications. And I think it should be used in epilepsy in these selected patients, in spasticity and MS, also in selected patients. And as for like Tourette syndrome or Parkinson's, only in very selected cases. And do remember about this sort of rule of start low, go slow, and to always ask about addiction. So I hope this will be your take-home message.
Thank you for the great talk and the take-home messages. Hope to meet again. Thank you, Natalia.
Thank you so much.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.